think I'm going to preach on that. I'm not. But for a really good reason. I'm doing something this morning that I have done only a handful of times in my 3-decade-plus priesthood. I'm not preaching on any of today's readings. Instead, I'm going to do what I did in response to the horror of 9/11. What I did in response to the 1988 Pan Am bombing in Lockerbie, Scotland. The Montreal massacre the following year, and the 2004 Asian tsunami. Darkness is both natural and human-made, which the church should respond to. And today we come to another should respond moment. Though needing to initially speak of the assassination, my focus this morning is not Charlie Kirk, but rather what I believe to be a Christ-centered reaction for Christ-centered Christians to the debacle we face today. It's a shame he missed. That was my first thought back in 2024 when I heard someone had tried to assassinate Trump. My immediate second thought was, you shouldn't think that. You're a Christian, you're a priest, and that is not the way of God. I've long preached love, the love of God, a sacred universe grounded on love, love for all, enemies included. And I've long denounced gun and other forms of violence. Yet my first response to the assassin's attempt was to approve it and to lament its failure. My inner desire for riddance of this man's poison showed how deeply fearful I am for myself, for my communities, for our world. And I was genuinely shocked at how instantly my Christianity dissolved into violence. I wasn't the only one having these thoughts, of course. TV and media coverage showed a wide public sentiment that without Donald Trump's violent, sexist, racist rhetoric, the U.S. would be a kinder, gentler, more peaceful place. And I know from experience, as a born and bred Californian who was once a gun-toting cop and later probation supervisor, that my birth country has been violent from its start. I grew up watching Westerns. Westerns where the gun was the answer to any disagreement, and it was easy to separate the goodies from the baddies. White hat, black hat. Us versus them. And always the side opposite your own. And things have only grown worse. To a tragic extent, the United States, the most heavily armed nation in the world, has become what is being called an assassination culture, where suspicion, fear, and contempt reign supreme. And those you disagree with are enemies to be destroyed. And for some, Charlie Kirk, evangelical Christian, conservative activist and commentator, and and one of the most vocal supporters of Donald Trump, Charlie Kirk was an enemy to be destroyed. While he held many views many folks, including myself, find reprehensible, the bullet that killed him, per the media outlet Politico, and this is what they wrote, that bullet punctured the idea that Kirk himself advanced, that political debate, albeit with verbal combat, could force a polarized country to confront its differences. To a liberal like me, Kirk's liberal biblical views and his insistence that the church in America must proclaim the Bible's whole truth instead of its current supposedly watered-down version, his message was largely repugnant. But be that as it may, Kirk valued the importance of communication, of conversation, and he believed real change happens through conversation, not through cancellation. He encouraged young people to stand firm in their convictions, and he proclaimed that the exchange of ideas strengthens both faith and democracy. Of course, we know which ideas he was referring to. To his supporters, Charlie Kirk died for his stand for righteousness, as he understood it. And conservative evangelical leaders hail him as a martyr for the faith. Whether we agree with this or not, Charlie Kirk was a child, a beloved child of God. Charlie Kirk possessed intrinsic, inviolable, and infinite dignity, and his killing was nothing less than a profound evil, a violent tragedy in a world where people are slaughtered by other people who think their lives are disposable. As horrendous as his murder was, what followed was equally heinous. After the killing, Trump had a rare opportunity to be the unifier in chief. He could have mourned his friend and taken the opportunity to denounce violence from anywhere on the political spectrum, but that's not his way. Instead, seeing himself Kirk's personal avenger, he saw another chance to lay blame on social media and the radical left. Totally ignoring right-wing violence, he incongruously called both assassination and violence in general, his words, the tragic consequence of demonizing those with whom you disagree. And he went on to declare, "This kind of rhetoric is directly responsible for the terrorism we're seeing in our country today, and it must stop now." All the while, calling his political opponents, quote, accessories to murder, the media, quote, the enemy of the American people, and immigrants, vermin. Rather than soothing the political divide, he instead deliberately fueled it. Well, we know it's impossible to miss that Kirk's murder has become a potent symbol for a segment of the American right that increasingly sees the radical left as an existential threat to its power and identity. A coordinated campaign has emerged targeting government employees, academics, teachers, and others voicing critical comments about him. People have been fired. They've been suspended. They've been threatened with death. And some Republicans have even proposed deporting critics from the good old US of A. But Kirk's murder represents the ultimate form of censorship, a form which undermines not only Kirk's voice, but the principle of open expression itself upon which democracy is built and thrives. It's called by some, quote, the assassin's veto, describing the use of violence or threats of violence to silence opposing views. Trump vowed he'll continue to attack opposing voices. Think Stephen Colbert and Jimmy Kimmel, as well as any other comments deemed to be, in his words, criticizing him too much. No mention how too much will be gauged. As we all know, an ongoing and increasingly fierce debate is raging about something that is at the very heart of all of us and everything, free speech, about its protections, its boundaries, and the way society responds to words it doesn't like. Many admire Kirk's blunt, zealous style and think he gave voice to ideas some believe have been ignored, while others despise his rhetoric and call it hateful and dangerous. The First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution was designed to protect unpopular speech precisely because it's easiest to defend the voices we agree with. But protecting speech means protecting everyone, including Charlie Kirk. This is a critical time for democracy. The times are dark, and darkness cannot be dissipated by more darkness. It will only make it thicker. Neither can violence be eliminated by more violence. Only light can dissipate darkness, and only God's love can liberate us from ourselves. We, followers of the Christ, have by baptism been called and empowered to bring that light and love of Christ to a world being smothered by darkness. The way of Jesus is strict non-violence, and the church's response must be to somehow concretely work to build a path for peace, light, and non-violence, a path that reflects a different way of being human. Such a path requires a coming together of factions divided by hate and obsessed with power. True community, the sort of thing that we experience and cherish here in St. John's and in other places, true community is essential. Not just citizens geographically close or part of the same social network, but a populace feeling increasingly connected, mutually responsible for what happens in the world, and working together for the good of the whole. An open communication, listening and sharing and getting to know one another and one another's personal situations and viewpoints, that's the way we get there. The restriction of discussion, of free, unfettered speech, leads to insecurity, and insecurity becomes fear. Fear is a real disease, a ravager of life, But unlike a lot of diseases, there is a cure for this disease. 1 John 4, verse 18 reminds us, and you know this quote very well, perfect love casts out fear. And love needs freedom to live and to grow. Love is the church's primary, shall we say, business, its mandate, an authentic conversation among dissenting people and parties, friends, neighbors, co-workers, politicians, can turn hostility into empathy and be the antidote to today's cultural contempt. We need to come together. No one remains unrelatable when you know their full story. I'm not Pollyannish. I'm too long in the tooth to actually think this is likely to be fixed in this broken and alienated culture. But you and I and all of us, are followers of the Prince of Peace. Our very identity is rooted in God, and nothing is impossible for the power of love. So each of us, in our own way, in our own unique, individual, tiny seemingly, but really big way, and on our own small patch of earth, and amid all the powers of estrangement that challenge and kill, be like St. Francis. Be like St. Francis. Where there's hatred, sow love. Where there's injury, pardon. Where there's despair, sow hope. And where there's darkness, bring the light of love. The light of Christ is what we'll be bringing. That light which shines in the darkness, and the darkness cannot overwhelm it.